Welcome to this podcast from the Presbyterian Church in Ireland, exploring aspects of our life and witness at this time.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another podcast episode from the Presbyterian Church in Ireland. Incredibly, these podcasts are almost a year old, and this is our 30th episode. So we've hit the big 3-0, and that probably means either that we should start growing up soon or that we can no longer claim to be beginners and probably need to start delivering. But it's been great over the past few months to expand and develop our team of hosts. And thanks to Neil Harrison, Ruth Bromley and Graham Thompson for how they've pitched in along the way and just widened our voice as a podcast team. We look forward to hearing more from them over the next few months. And so let me give the regular reminder to subscribe to the podcast so that you receive future episodes. This week, we're going to be exploring the whole area of small groups. Meeting in small groups throughout the week is something that happens, I think, in many of our congregations right across the PCI. And actually, I sense it's one of the areas of church life that's been able to be maintained or even developed in some places, either through online opportunity or even the nature and size at differing stages of restrictions as well. So this is something we want to explore today, the different purposes, benefits, opportunities there are in meeting in small groups, and to consider the variety of forms this can take, whether for Bible study or for prayer, or for fellowship, or even for evangelism. So to do that, I'm delighted to be joined today by the Reverend Sam Mawinney, who's minister in Adelaide Road in Dublin, and Johnny Campbell, who's an elder in Orangefield. Folks, thanks for being willing to have the chat today and join with me.
Thanks, Rick. Good to be here.
Good to see you.
It's good to have you with us. Maybe we could just begin, just tell us a little bit about yourself, maybe the congregation you're part of, how you serve within it. Sam, we'll start with you.
Yeah, okay. Sam Mawinney. I'm a husband, married to Karen. A father, three boys, Peter, Andrew and David, and we're in Dublin, in the city centre, south side, Adelaide Road Presbyterian Church. We're a church that gathers people from all over the south side, from many nations, and people who are Christians really look into us from there, and we serve them in that way. I'm the minister and serve there for the last 11 years.
Okay, well, Johnny?
Yeah, so I'm Johnny. I'm 31, also a husband, no kids yet. One little dog who actually escaped out the fence there about 2 minutes before we were due to start recording. So I'm a bit stressed out by him nipping out the fence. But I've been in Orangefield Presbyterian in East Belfast near enough my whole life. I was baptised there as a baby, and then I was away for a couple of years as a student, but then back at 25 and married in the church and stepped on to eldership just after that. And now I do a little bit of teaching and preaching, and I also look after a task group for discipleship, which includes home groups as well.
Okay. Well, let's start there, Johnny, in terms of that task group for discipleship, small groups, a key part of that. Maybe small groups are one of the ways, are the areas of church life that has been able to continue for you folks in some form over the last year. So just tell us what that looked like in Orangefield over the last year, and maybe how you've tried to reshape or step into those more.
Yeah, I feel like, yeah, the food bank is operating and Alpha is happening, and there's a Sunday gathering or there's a Sunday kind of worship meeting that's being broadcast. And then apart from that, small groups are near enough the only thing that's still going in Orangefield. And you'll not be surprised to hear it's been a virtual system that we're using to gather. And in terms of like reshaping those and changing those, I think there's obviously been a change of format. There's certain things that the restrictions prevent us from doing that you just can't replicate or reproduce virtually. But I think on the other side of the coin, I think small groups are recognized now throughout the congregation as the primary place of discipleship and community in a way that we were probably trying to communicate over the last 4 or 5 years, trying to say to people, look, the Sunday gathering, that because of our size, the Sunday gathering is the primary place for worship and teaching, but it just can't be the primary place for community and discipleship and mission because there are 550 people here. So home group or small group, whatever you want to call it, is the primary place for that. And I think, you know, in some ways the restrictions have really emphasized that for people, and they've felt their need for community more acutely in the last year.
That's really helpful. We'll come back to maybe some of the ways that you've been doing that in a moment, Sam. Have small groups always been a part of Adelaide Road, or, you know, what form has small groups taken within the congregation over the last year?
Yeah, no, they have. And I mean, I think as a city centre church, people found it really difficult to come back into the church for what would have been a traditional midweek. And so the whole home group situation has been developed in previous years. And, you know, we've had five or six of those in different parts of the city, you know, working on that sort of format of smaller communities, seeking to understand the scriptures better and to live out their Christian faith. Certainly then the pandemic hit and we just weren't able to meet, and the travel restrictions in this part of Ireland are quite severe. So we're not able to get about, and we had to rethink then what we did. And it did give us a great opportunity. I think we went smaller. Obviously, we went virtual. We had to look for new leadership. And we had this idea of wanting people to discuss their faith. And we renamed them 3D groups. So the idea was developing prayer-filled relationships by digging deeper into God's word while discussing how it impacts upon our lives. I mean, I love that. I thought that wasn't my idea, but it was good, you know, and our folks have bought into that. And that is the desire, is just to talk and to think about what our faith means to us. And we've got 9 groups now, as opposed to the original 3.
Okay. So in some ways, I like that phrase, that this forced you to rethink. So you've reshaped, you've remodeled what you've done. It sounds like there's been a little bit of growth in that in terms of people's engagement and developing fresh leaders as well. What have been some of the different dynamics of how you go about these groups? What's contained within them? What's the focus of them? And maybe some of the benefits you've seen in that approach?
I mean, I'd say this at core, they're still the same. I mean, I think, you know, there isn't anything outstanding that just says this is completely different. I think they're designed as well. They have worked virtually, but they are designed that we can meet in reality. And hopefully that will bring a new dynamic to them as well. We've given slightly more freedom in the sense that, you know, people have done different things. Some groups have done some of the PCI stuff. Some groups have just looked at Christian books, and some have stuck with the sermon and worked on that. This term, we're pretty much looking at the early church in Acts. So yeah, the Bible, I think, obviously forms part of that, the central part. Prayer is still a significant reality in that. I think the accountability side and those things, I mean, we'll see how that works out. But new people have come in. I think with the smaller groups, that, I suppose that is one thing I should highlight, is that because the folks have bought into it, they're much more likely to invite people. And so we've already seen more growth over the last term than we would have seen maybe in the previous year. They were kind of static before. And I think people are saying, yeah, I'm enjoying this. Would you like to come? It really has been a sort of organic growth.
Thanks. That's really helpful. Johnny, is that a similar story in Orangefield, or do you want to tell us some of the dynamics that you've had in your groups?
Yeah, very similar, Rick. So we've been trying to encourage some freedom within certain boundaries. And I think probably if you go back 10 years ago, I think there was a huge amount of freedom with our home groups. So home group leaders could really decide on the dynamics of their home group themselves, you know. So I think you probably had some home groups that felt like a dinner party, and then some that felt like a very rigorous Bible study. So we've been trying to encourage some freedom, but also more consistency as well. And what we started to do before the pandemic, but I think we've been doing a lot more of, is talking about the 4 vision priorities of the church. So they are presence, word, people, and world. And we have been saying to home group leaders, I feel like to try and change the dynamics of home groups, we've had to work more intensively with the home group leaders and really communicate clearly with them. And what we're saying is, look, we want all four of those priorities represented in the activities of your home group. So it's actually not okay to just run a rigorous Bible study, or, and it's not okay to just feel like a dinner party. Like there has to be something devotional. There has to be something biblical. There has to be something pastoral, and there has to be something missional. Now, within those four categories, you have tremendous freedom. Go and innovate and come up with something exciting or new that we haven't seen before, whatever. But you need to be able to show that all four of those are happening. And in a sense, the home group is like a little microcosm of the whole church, really. It's not like just one specific activity within the life of the church. It has to feel like the whole thing. So that's been really fun, because I guess in the pandemic, we've also seen some new groups planted, some numerical growth, and some leaders moving down a pipeline. And if leaders are learning to lead for the first time or lead better, we're having the opportunity to do a bit more training, to say a bit more to them. And we're just, yeah, trying to shape home groups around those four things. And I think being Presbyterian, if you go back 10 years ago, the vast majority of them were doing something biblical and something pastoral. So they prayed for each other and checked in and grew in friendship, and they studied the Bible. But not very many would have been doing something devotional in the sense of creating space for encounter with the Holy Spirit in home group. And then not many would have been doing something missional. So, you know, we've this thing in Orangefield, we say, we want you to put an empty chair around the table when you gather for home group. Now, I don't know how that works on Zoom.
An empty box.
An empty box, yeah. Just somebody puts their phone on and there's an empty box. But I don't think we would have previously seen much missional activity through home groups. And we're trying to encourage leaders to think about that and to sort of imagine that the empty seat will be filled by somebody who is currently outside the church rather than someone who's inside.
Can I just say, Johnny, I thought it was excellent. And I mean, the idea of freedom within boundaries really struck me. And I think you've articulated what I think we're trying to do. And yeah, that was really good. So,
yeah. Yeah, I do think at one time our home group leaders probably had carte blanche, you know, and it's because they're incredibly capable people. Some of them are elders, some of them are ordained, you know, most of them are so very capable. They could probably plant a little church at any stage, and they can teach the Bible, and they can lead people in prayer, and they can lead a little community. So we didn't want to micromanage. But I think if you allow that to happen over 10, 15, 20 years, there's actually quite a big divergence, because some people are Bible teachers by gifting and calling. So that's what they do with their home group. And then other people are gifted in hospitality, so they throw dinner parties. And suddenly you realize that depending on which home group you join, you might have quite a radically different experience. So we had to do something.
So you're given a framework, but there's freedom there. Sam, can I pick up with you? Just, I know you've been developing some, you know, doing a fair bit of work over the past few years in Adelaide Road around the development of discipleship. Why do you think, or how have you found small groups to be really crucial to the development of discipleship within your congregation?
Yeah, we have actually. And I think we've learned through that process as well. And I mean, one of the, I suppose we use the teams thing, so truth, equipping, accountability, mission, and supplication. I think the things that Johnny had been speaking about as well, and that gives us a framework to kind of include these things, particularly mission, you know, and to keep that as a focus as well. I think the reason for the whole small group thing is that I was struck very early on that you tend to want to think that you're a pretty good preacher, or that you're preaching well, but then you go and visit or you talk to people and you realize, well, they either haven't grasped it, or they haven't listened, or they've got the wrong end of the stick or something. So, and some people who've been in the church for a long time and they really haven't been growing. So I think it was that sort of sense of needing to chat to people about what was being said, to engage with them personally. That was really what moved us in that direction. And to be honest, the First Thessalonians verse, which I wrote down here, we loved you so much that we were delighted to share with you not only the gospel of God, but our lives as well, because you've become so dear to us. So it was that sort of twin approach of truth and personal relationship. And I think that is only done really in small groups, or best done in small groups, with that framework. So that's where we were moving.
Yeah. And then, Johnny, putting your work hat on for a minute, do you want to tell listeners a little bit about what you do as the director for Alpha in Northern Ireland? How have you seen an explosion in the use of small groups at the heart then of mission? And maybe have you any stories to share around that as well?
Yeah, so I obviously have been with the Alpha UK team for about 5 years, and the most important part of what I do is kind of lead our operations in Northern Ireland. And this year has, the past year has been the best of times and the worst of times all at once, in the same, probably in the same way that we experienced in church. We suffered an immediate loss last March of so many things that we couldn't get back and we couldn't replicate. But there has been another story as well within the world of Alpha, which is last March we rescued about 100 Alphas in Northern Ireland that were stranded. They got to week 7 and they couldn't meet, and they had to find some way of getting to the end. And then we started to ask the question, could you viably run an Alpha from week 1 to 11 on Zoom with a bunch of strangers that you'd never met before? And we invited some church leaders to have a conversation about that. And we were astonished by the appetite of people for experimenting and seeing what happened. It felt like a big risk. Nikki Gumbel at the time said, "It'll never work." My own Alpha coordinator here in Orangefield said, "I just don't see how it's going to work." And some of the team actually said, "Look, we will take a break from this for a while and see how it goes." I felt, for the sake of my own integrity, I had to do it. If I was going to encourage anybody else to do it, I had to do it myself. So last March, we ran an Alpha week 1 to 11 with people we had never met in person before. There was 23 of them. And the small group is the engine of Alpha. It's the key. Without the small group, Alpha wouldn't feel the way it should at all. And we were surprised by how rich the conversation was. We had to do a lot of adaptation. I think the team struggled with some of what was missing. But the thing is, for a guest, they have no idea what's missing because they haven't experienced it any other way. So they're just enjoying it. And we have, right across the UK, been blown away by the number of guests that we've seen connecting with Alpha and Alpha small groups. I don't think we understood just how high some of the barriers are to accepting an invitation to come on to something like that. So in the Alpha I ran this time last year, we had a few people who, for childcare reasons, wouldn't have come in person. A few for mental health reasons wouldn't have come in person, and two of my own friends came who had turned me down before. So the kind of proof was in the pudding. You know, there was something about sitting with their laptop for an hour in their living room that was safer and easier. And the internet is where we explore stuff anyway, so why not explore faith and ask these questions and meet some people and stuff. And it has been an extraordinary God story. And Alpha are now developing their own kind of bespoke online platform for launch in September. So I think Alpha Online is here to stay. Like, we'll go back to doing it in person as soon as possible, but online will still be an option next year and the year after. So one of the guests who was on our Alpha this time last March is now a baptized member of my home group. And she came from outside the church, hadn't been in church from she was a child. A million and one questions, quite skeptical, huge personality, great fun, perfect for Alpha. And just after finishing Alpha, she started to pray twice a day. She just, she was experimenting with this stuff and exploring it all. And as she was praying one day, she felt really compelled to reach out to Jesus and to invite him in a real way into her life. And we've seen all the wonderful things you see with a new Christian, like huge appetite transformation in her life, and she's come into our home group. And actually, there's just nothing better for a home group than a new Christian. It just does everybody the world of good, you know.
That's so encouraging, John. It's brilliant to hear of how kind of this has caused fresh development, fresh movement, fresh believers as well. I'm wondering, in terms of the virtual world, the online small group, is there any different dimension or is there any different dynamic to that that you think, you know, people who are listening right now might be meeting in small groups, leading small groups, and that might be the case over the next few months, having seen, you know, glimpses of the roadmaps ahead. So is there any different dynamics that you think leaders need to step into, or that members need to think about, churches need to be prioritised?
Yeah, so we actually took a little framework for how to lead in this capacity here on Zoom. Sorry, I realise listeners are not seeing what we're seeing, but we're looking at each other around the screen here. And we took the little framework that we'd been using on Alpha and used it in Orangefield, which was 4 S's. So we said you need to make your group smaller because the conversation's not very organic. If you have 12 people around the screen, you need 6 or 8. We said run the session shorter because Zoom's exhausting. And also, if you promise people they'll be done in an hour, then it really builds trust. And we said to my home group during the summer, look, give us 1 hour and give us a good hour. Put your phone away, make a coffee, give us like your best attention for 1 hour. And no matter what is happening at the top of the hour, we'll be finished. And we saw a bounce in attendance and enthusiasm from that. So it was great. We said, lead the group stronger. If you speak to people by name in person all the time, it feels a bit confrontational and weird. But if you do that on Zoom, it's a relief because you know when you're being spoken to. And we said you probably need to lead in a slightly more directive way, and people won't be upset. They'll be relieved that they know when their turn is to speak. And then the final thing was we said you need to lead a little bit savvier as well, just in terms of the technology. Like, don't try to replicate what you've been doing in person. Do a bit of learning, you know, lean in and kind of learn how to use this thing well and to adapt with it, and then go for it and take the stress out of the technology stuff. So that's where we were working with it.
Yeah, no, I think that's just helpful. I think it's a good summary. I really want to emphasize the leadership part. I think Zoom does not work unless you take a sort of control of it and unless you have some kind of pattern that you're going to work out through it. You see that at the beginning of meetings where there's nothing planned and it just doesn't work. So I think that planning, smaller, yeah, taking control. Screen share, I think that's that last point as well. It works, I think, with lists and things. It does sort of break it up. I think we are discovering that it is a way to reach people who are maybe looking in and don't want that sense of commitment. And I think that is what we'll have to wrestle with. Obviously, you know, virtual is not the same as the real thing. So we just need to be careful that we just don't go down that sort of individualistic route as well. So,
and it is a danger. I think that, you know, we do know that digital fatigue is there and that, as you say, Sam, we don't want to live all of our lives in a digital format. However, I had a conversation with the minister last week who was beginning to surmise what aspects of congregational life might be able to remain or develop online whenever we go back to living our lives a bit more face-to-face, that actually there might still be appetite for a little bit of our lives, whether it's, you know, short planning meetings or, you know, little times of prayer or, you know, small groups for folks who won't be able to attend. Even, you know, I heard of another church who's beginning to think about how to continue to connect with their students when they leave to go to university. Actually, suddenly there's a platform now, or there's capability to do that. So, I mean, I'm guessing small groups aren't part of all congregations' lives. And so I'm wondering if there's, you know, a minister, an elder, a leader in a congregation who's considering how to develop small group ministry in their church. Sam, is there anything that you would encourage them to do or to think about in this area?
Yeah, I suppose at the heart of it, I suppose one of the things I want to say is about prayer. I think we often think about techniques. And I wanted to start that way because I am increasingly aware that we just need to pray with people begin to get a vision from God about these things, and see the work of God in people's lives as we begin to come together. So I suppose I just wanted to root everything that I would say in prayer. I think the second thing would be discussion. Get together a group of people together who might, you know, who are on your leadership team or some, you know, and just have a chat with them and ask them what's going on and how you might progress these things. So, I think to be fair, the Life on Life missional discipleship stuff, that training that we got, I mean, I think I'm hearing from Johnny just the training that he's getting in different aspects from Alpha and other places. I mean, I think you do need some system that helps you kind of put a frame on this. And for us, it was the perimeter stuff from Life on Life and that. So, yeah, just prayer, I think discussion, and then communication. I think you have to, I mean, or the 3D group thing for us was, it sounds simple, but it took a lot of people, a lot of energy communicating that, meetings with leaders, letters from the minister, constant reinforcement from the pulpit. And I think that's part of why it worked.
Yeah, I think if somebody said to me tomorrow, I'd really like to start some small groups, I think the first thing I might say would be headhunt your team and your small group leaders. I think if you ask for volunteers, I'm bringing an experience probably from Alpha to this, but if you ask for volunteers, there can be a risk sometimes that you get people who would really like an audience for what they want to say or what they want to do or teach. And I think fantastic small group leaders have soft skills. They prefer to listen rather than to speak. They prefer to ask great questions than give great answers. And I would think about your best friend outside the church. Who would you feel safe to entrust them to in a small group capacity? And I would headhunt those leaders, and then I would want to train them very well and communicate well to them about the values of home group ministry and what a home group should look like, but also should feel like as well.
Yeah, I mean, I'll back Johnny on that as well. I think you're right. That whole idea of, and I think that's where the prayer thing was coming in for me as well, that it's not just you're thinking about this together, you're training them up, you're seeing who they are. And that choosing of leadership, I mean, as Jesus took time to pray and to choose his leadership carefully, mm-hmm. that's a very key point.
Yeah. If it's not like a daft thing to say, I would say to people as well that if you're going to go for it, properly go for it, you know. And I think church can sometimes feel a little bit like a marketplace full of different programs and things that are running. And because Presbyterians love democracy, we're very democratic, and we like equality as well. And so sometimes there's this fallacy that everything that is happening in the church in terms of programs is of equal value. And I just don't believe that. I think some things are more important than others. And I would want to say to somebody, if you're serious about home groups, small groups, and this is where disciples are going to make disciples, I'd say make it a priority, give it stage time. Don't be apologetic about asking people to get involved. And yeah, I heard a story from Canada a couple of years ago about small group ministry that came into conflict with a cards club in church, and it turned into this this whole thing, you know. And I was like, that just shouldn't happen, because small groups where disciples are making disciples are more important than playing cards. And it shouldn't be hard for a leader to say that. But sometimes, strangely, in church, if the cards club has been there since the dawn of time, and some of the founding members of the church are still playing cards there, it can be difficult to say. I would really go for it and not be afraid to say how important it is.
Yeah, Johnny, I don't know too many card playing clubs in the Presbyterian Church in Ireland, but I can certainly see the parallels, and really appreciate what you've brought there. Maybe to finish, we ask each contributor to share something from the Bible that's particularly important to them at this time. Sam, I wonder if we'd start with you for that.
Yeah, well, I mean, in Adelaide Road, we're preaching through Acts at the moment, and I suppose Acts 2, 42, and the word devoted. I suppose because of what we've lost, You know, I think that God has really been speaking to us about, you know, what has been our priorities, what should be our priorities, and that idea of being devoted. And I'm just going to go with the fellowship. I mean, prayers there, obviously breaking of bread and the teaching, but I was really struck about devoted to the fellowship and the word of koinonia. And that was like a common sharing. And also the other side of that was generosity. And I just think if we keep that sort of little idea of devoted to these things and work out what the practical implications of those things are in our lives, we will see better relationships with Jesus, better relationships with each other, better relationships with this world. And it's messy. I mean, this is a messy time we're in, and yet we want to keep committed to each other. And I think when we come out of it, we'll experience more mess. Let's just keep that devotion. So just working through what that means.
Yeah, no, that word being devoted to fellowship feels like a word for the season. So, Johnny, do you want to add?
Yeah, no, totally agree. I think like we've spent a year consuming church, haven't we? You know, through YouTube and Facebook and screens and stuff. And whenever people are devoted to fellowship, they're contributing to something, they're doing it for each other rather than themselves. I wanted to say very briefly that James 1 hasn't been too far away from my consciousness for most of the year. I just think, consider it pure joy when you face trials of many kinds. I think I heard somebody preaching earlier in the year, they said that word trial has a very broad range of interpretation, including at the sort of further reach of its syntactical range about being a plague. You know, when you journey through a plague, consider it pure joy, because the more your faithfulness is tested, the more you learn to persevere, and the more you persevere, you develop in character and hope. I've just been reminded of that a lot throughout the whole year, that like faith is the X factor in all of this, isn't it? You know, that sometimes you maybe what you see is loss, and what you see is disappointment, and what you see is restriction and frustration. But faith is an X factor. When you look at it with faith, you can take some of those things that are in the loss column and you can put them in a gains column, because I'm sort of choosing to believe that everything that is happening is doing something of value in me and in us. So yeah, apart from the year of my football career that's been lost, I think it's just gone. I'm not going to get it back.
Yeah, there's some things more important, aren't there, John? Listen, thank you to you both for contributing today, for sharing your stories, and both, you know, stories of kind of growth and change and multiplication through small group ministry and various forms at this time. So really encouraged to hear that, and thanks for the helpful advice you've brought as well about how to develop that ministry as well. So we appreciate your input today.
Cheers, Rick.
Thanks, Rick.
Before we finish today, let me just draw your attention to some opportunities and resources you might find useful at this time. Sam did mention some resources from PCI that might be helpful for some of your small groups. There's the Proximity Series, which are little booklets, each with 8 sessions worth of Bible studies and discussion questions and a variety of themes. The most recent one was launched last year, that was called Habits of a Lifetime, and explores the theme of spiritual disciplines, which feels like a timely theme at this time. So you can find those at presbyterianireland.org/proximity. There are also the whole sessions aimed at providing shorter sessions for digital small groups, and PCI's latest For Now material, which includes some small group sessions too. All of those are available on the PCI website. But that's all for today's episode. We'll be back next time with an episode focused on thinking about how we can be resetting and rebuilding life in our congregations over the months ahead. But until then, thanks for listening.
You've been listening to a podcast from the Presbyterian Church in Ireland. Thanks for joining us.